Welcome back, folks, and a special welcome to anyone who has joined us as guests of Julie, who is about to present. And I'm excited about what she has in store for us, and would like to invite Andrea Sainer, who is our Old Testament professor and I think Julie's advisor, to come and introduce her.
Julie is a student, a pastor, a wife, mother, and child of God, and for her, those rightly belong in the opposite order. She began her journey at EMS in 2011 after working for 10 years as a registered nurse. Her very first class, I believe, was Education for the Whole Body of Christ. Apparently that's right. Which speaks to the fact that her focus on the entire community of faith across generations has been significant for her throughout her seminary experience. Julie's call to ministry arose out of her experience as a mother to Helen and Olivia, and more recently to Brant, alongside her husband Kurt. She's currently pastor at Westover United Methodist Church, a position she took on this summer after having been director of children and youth ministry at Standardsville UMC for several years. And as I was just telling Nate, Julie is the last of the advisees that I inherited from Joni Sankin, who used to teach here, or the final one for me. And throughout my time advising Julie, I have long been impressed with her maturity in holding together all of these various roles in ministry with her family as a student in the midst of all of the many challenges and opportunities that those roles create together. Blessings to you, Julie, as you share with us your capstone project, Becoming an Intergenerational Faith Community.
I might cry a little bit because this is like the end of 6.5 years and kind of an emotional moment. So hopefully I won't, but just in case I do, I'm warning you. I'm really excited to share with you today my capstone project, Becoming an Intergenerational Community of Faith. For me, this project is not only an academic exercise, but it is something that I am passionate about, and it's the story of my life. It is a significant part of my journey into ministry. As a mother, there's nothing that I want more than for my children to develop a faith and to know Christ as their Savior and their Lord, and to find their place within God's church. And as a pastor, part of my call in serving God's church is to help the church envision the ways it is called by God to live out the baptismal covenant, so that all generations can come together as equally loved and gifted members. I hope to share with you today how we as church leaders can go about becoming more intentional as an intergenerational community of faith. So, what does an intergenerational community of faith look like? A few weeks ago, my church hosted Family Kite Day. This was a dream of one of our members who is now deceased, that we might have an event where families could simply be together in fellowship. This picture is just one example of a beautiful relationship that was starting to build and occurred that day. This is my daughter, Olivia, and one of the older gentlemen teaching her how to make a kite. Kite Day created a space for the purpose of fellowship and created a story that all members now cherish and share as their own. So normally when we talk about an intergenerational community of faith or intergenerational ministry, one would talk about all the different ages across the spectrum. But for this project, I have chosen to focus on children and youth and how they're integrated into the community. Intergenerational communities of faith are not new. Churches have always been made up of multiple generations. But what is relatively new is the way that we, as church leaders, are seeking to be more intentional in the ways that we practice our faith. Holly Allen and Christine Ross, authors of Intergenerational Christian Formation, provide this definition of intergenerational ministry. They say it is a church that intentionally cultivates meaningful interaction between all generations. And then David Kinnaman, author of You Lost Me, says, flourishing intergenerational relationships should distinguish the church from other institutions. What I hear in these two definitions and what I have witnessed is that intergenerational community is about meaningful relationships among members that hopefully help one another have greater relationship with Christ. An intergenerational community provides a space for learning one another's stories, where wisdom and shared experiences of worship and service form strong bonds that last a lifetime. So, why now? Why do we need to be talking about this? With the decline in church membership, especially among young families with children, everyone wants to know what they can do to help turn around the trend of decline. While being intentional in intergenerational ministry is not a quick fix, the research shows that it is one way to help deepen the faith journey and relationships among the family of God that already exist within that particular community. Part of why intergenerational community is so important for churches to consider is because of the changes in our culture. Everyone has gotten busier and everyone is moving faster. Young families, whether they are religious or not, are looking for meaningful relationships and a place to belong. I'm sure some of you have had the experience of having a great Sunday school teacher or a youth leader, and maybe while you didn't remember all of the Bible lessons and the wonderful things they taught you, you did remember how they were a part of your life, how they brought meaning to your life, how they helped shape your faith in wonderful ways. The disconnect. If we think about intergenerational ministry as the coming together of various ages, then the opposite of that would be age segregation. Some, like Allen and Ross, refer to this as the silo effect. What that means is that for decades, churches have embraced a model of ministry where everyone is divided into classes or to small groups or ministry settings based on their age or their stage in life. Ron Foster and Kendra Creasy Dean refer to this as the one-eared Mickey Mouse model, meaning that youth ministry has oftentimes been this one little part of ministry over here, barely connected to the rest of the church. George Barna, in his book, Transforming Children into Spiritual Champions, suggests part of this disconnect has also been the ways that church leaders have focused on entertaining children or babysitting children rather than discipling children. Most churches tend to organize their children's ministry by putting children into certain classes based on their age. In some instances, children are never even entering the sanctuary. They're never experiencing the sacraments or hearing the prayers of the people because they're separated from the rest of the community. When a church doesn't offer any opportunities for generations together for worship and discipleship, it puts limits on what God can do to make faithful disciples. The research shows that being intentional about becoming an intergenerational community of faith means that one needs to consider the following factors as a starting point: developmental needs, theological insights, biblical principles, and best practices. Developmental needs. Based on his research, Barna says that the time that's most critical for children to develop their faith is from ages 5 to 12. With this in mind, Eric Erickson's developmental theory suggests generations grow each other up, meaning the ways they interact together helps to form one another's faith. James Fowler adds to this by saying, "The community facilitates growth by offering intellectual stimulation, affection, advanced age modeling." This means one's faith formation is always happening in relationship in community with others. And Albert Bandura says, "There is power in observing those who are further along in life." For a congregation, this means that older adults have a vital role to play, as both younger adults, youth, and children are observing, watching, and learning. So let me share with you an example of what this might look like. At my previous church, we had an after-school ministry called TAT, Tweens and Teens, or something like that. I can't remember exactly. It was led by a team of retired older adults. These adults poured their heart and soul into developing loving relationships with a group of really tough middle school boys. As the adults modeled Christ-like behavior with this group of boys, the boys learned what love looked like. They learned what it looked like to belong to a community. They were learning good Christian character. The adults also grew in their faith as well, and their understanding of God's call and God's purpose. Theology, of course, is our cornerstone of how intergenerational community practices its faith. And once again, our theology shows us how relationships are an integral part of intergenerational communities. Our understanding of who God is and how God is at work in our lives is evidenced in our baptismal covenant. The nature of intergenerational ministry is demonstrated when we think about the various roles that each person plays in the case of infant baptism in the Methodist Church, for example. The child, the parents, and the community all come together within that covenant. Intergenerational ministry provides a way for all persons, especially children, to practice incarnational living, to be the hands and feet of Jesus, to demonstrate care and concern for older adults when they are missing from worship, to experience the wonder and awe of God on Christmas Eve with glowing candles, and to take leaps of faith beyond what some adults might be willing to do. I won't read through all of these for you, but it is clear that the biblical narrative offers compelling witness of the ways that God designed communities of faith. Each of these passages tells the faith stories of individuals as they are formed within community. Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9 has always drawn me as a model for living out my own faith as a pastor and as a parent, but also for the church. This passage describes the ways that the church is to gather all persons together in community for the purpose of hearing God's story and then passing on that story to all generations. Best practices. These are the ways in which other churches have already worked on becoming an intergenerational community of faith. First, exposure. Ivy Beckwith, a pastor and author, says, "Faith only matures as it is exposed to the spiritual hothouse of biblical community." Diane Olson says, "The most important part of helping children grow as disciples of Jesus Christ is for them to receive faithful witness of seasoned disciples who serve as examples, teachers, mentors, and friends." I know for sure that my children think of many older adults as their friends, some who are here today. And many ministry leaders simply point to sustainability as something to consider. In other words, helping the children and the youth be integrated into the leadership of the church. So how do we move forward? Many churches want to know, how do I get started with what it looks like to be an intergenerational community of faith? Obviously, starting with prayer and discernment and asking questions, having conversation is important. But beyond that, Brenda Snallum, who writes for the Fuller Youth Institute, offers the following as key factors. One, assessment. Begin where you are. Obtain buy-in from core leadership and equip them to take an active role. In other words, it's not just about children's ministry making this happen. It's the whole leadership of the church. Establish intergenerational culture as a way of life. Now, this requires people in the church overcoming their individualistic mindset. Find a balance for the needs of the members. There might still be some places where different age groups exist, but that would not be the overall pattern within the church. And then finally, evaluation. Regularly asking questions, is this working? Is this not working? What can we do better? What can we change? So putting it into practice, the overall idea is to limit age segregation. This means all age groups are present for all ministries, from worship to small groups to planning meetings. People are no longer divided into groups according to their age. Promoting age inclusivity, and we'll get more to that in just a little bit, but this means that the church council has children and youth reps as well as adults, and that children and youth are serving as liturgists, and that they're taking part in worship planning, just to name a few ways. Then when I think about envisioning a legacy, I think of our current youth leader at my church who understands the importance of building relationships with the kids, and she is always constantly seeking ways to pass on her faith to these kids, leaving a legacy. Rituals, of course, are shared experiences that help people bond together. They're both formalized rituals like Holy Communion and informal rituals like singing Happy Birthday during worship services. They help people know that they belong and that they are valued. And we've already talked about intention a little bit, but intentionality is one of the threads that is constant throughout this whole process of becoming an intergenerational community. The five pillars. Diane Olson, a United Methodist deacon, writes about a holistic approach to children's ministry and the ways that a church can help integrate children into these five discipleship areas. I have added a fifth as fellowship. In my own experience, I've found that to be very important. All of these are important, but I would like to lift up a couple for you to think about. One of the most significant shifts in intergenerational ministry that occurred in my last church was in the way that we thought about fifth Sundays. Everyone knew that on fifth Sundays, we would have a time for intergenerational community and intergenerational ministry to happen. This meant that our Sunday school hour would all be intergenerational and that our worship would be intergenerational in nature. I can remember reading and reflecting on the story of creation in small groups one day with mixed ages of people sitting around tables talking about those scriptures and what that looked like, and then having experiential times of reflecting on that story. And some of the people here today can remember that time as well. It was a wonderful time of learning and sharing together. The ministry network group called Killing Sunday School, Rebirthing Cross-Generation Community is a great resource for looking into this kind of thing a little bit more. And then the second area I would like to lift up for us to think about is worship. As we know, worship is a central part of who we are as God's people and what we are called to do. A community truly becomes intergenerational when it worships together. This doesn't mean simplifying the message or ensuring that children are still and quiet. This means helping all persons find their place in the worship community. It means children standing on pews, looking over their parents' shoulder. It means children walking in the aisles, dancing. It means children singing with the adult choir. This is a picture of a pray ground. A pray ground is a relatively new tool in intergenerational ministry that some churches are using to help make space for all age groups to be a part of the worship service. As you can see, the very young children have their own space to play in the midst of the worship service. Now, this is just one example of a way a church has created a space for intergenerational worship to happen. My own son, he would not stay there. He would be up with me. We're still working on that. Warnings. There are warnings. Intergenerational ministry is not a one-size-fits-all. It's about knowing the DNA of your church, of the people, their gifts, and it's about experimenting with what works and what doesn't work. The focus is on the process of becoming. This is not about putting a program into place. This is about relationship, where faith takes root among all members. You should know that not everyone is going to agree with this model of ministry. Not everyone is going to be happy with this. It will take time to create understanding and patience as various generations get to know one another. I like to think of it as a birthing process. And in conclusion, intergenerational ministry requires a new perspective. Intergenerational ministry is a biblical mandate. Intergenerational ministry is a cultural and societal need. It takes time, and there are infinite possibilities. And finally, intergenerational ministry forms disciples of Jesus Christ for the transformation of the world.